We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
That's right.
I know he's back. He was here, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
You had a brother, my son. Welcome, my son.
What's happening, King? How
we
you?
Said we were going to bring you back, too.
You did say that.
Yes, and we did.
Because we wanted to talk about all the violence that was happening, you know, in our communities and, you know, in the industry. And sadly, it's only gotten worse since then with the passing of PNB Rock.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I brought today my brothers, the official gun czar of New York, Brother A.T. Mitchell.
What's up?
He's been appointed by the mayor to pretty much focus on gun violence in New York City. So he's the man, the top man in that regard. And this is also the co-founder of Until Freedom, my brother Angelo Pinto, attorney Angelo Pinto.
So,
you know.
So where do we start? I guess, you know, well, the first reason why we wanted to bring you up, because everybody was talking about lyrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And rappers were talking about lyrics and DAs using their lyrics against them in court.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk about that first. So
okay.
What are your thoughts on that? Especially, you're from Harlem. You're
from the Bronx.
From the Bronx,
my
man.
Bad. My bad.
Jesus Christ.
Don't start no trouble.
Man, my bad. From the Bronx. Of course, you're a rapper. You were signed with Violator, signed so many times. You had records and you got arrested. But what are your thoughts on them using lyrics against you? Or any rapper,
I mean, we know that it happens, right? And if you, and you're engaged in a certain lifestyle, you're in the streets, you actively committing crimes, and then you talking about them, then you telling on yourself. I mean, that's just common sense. I think anybody...
People don't see it like that, though.
But if you... I'm saying, see, the difference is if you're just an entertainer and you're a rapper and you're rapping about what you've seen, and a lot of these rappers ain't living their life and they just making stuff up. So those situations don't... They don't fit into what we're talking about here. We're talking about when you're actively involved in the streets, you're actively involved in crime. There are videos with you doing things. You running around with people where they have enough to put your lyrics to say, hey, look, this is him right here doing this, and this is him saying he did that, right? If you just rapping about something that you didn't did, there's no trail, there's nothing for them to follow. So they can't just use your lyrics as evidence in chief.
Yeah, right. It's not like they heard. It's not like they're listening to rappers and saying, "Oh, he's rapping about killing somebody. Let's go lock him up." They already. That's just another piece of evidence that they're collecting.
Right. Evidence in chief. That's the key to it. Is not. It can't be evidence in chief. If it supports what they already know and they have people to cooperate and all those things, then you got to be smarter than that.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you a question now. Now, how would the DA know the difference, right? Now, I'm listening to some of the stuff that's going on with Young Thug's case, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the attorney was like, yeah, he said, F the judge, Your Honor, like he was talking to the judge. Of course, he wasn't talking about that judge, but that attorney made it seem like that. That mm-hmm. case is something different. But then I think Charlamagne...
But that's not a crime.
That's not a crime.
You understand what I'm saying? So what that does is, what I'm trying to say is, everything that you say out your mouth is going to be held against you. If before, if I say, yo, if my wife get out of line, I'm going to smack her in the mouth. And then
you smack your wife in the mouth.
She goes and says domestic violence, and then they pull it up. You made a conscious. These are things that you already said that you're willing to do. So you're allowing them to use things against you that come out your own mouth. We have to be a lot more mindful in the days. Like, I got locked up for crimes, and they try to utilize stuff in my trial too. So I'm aware of these things, and mm-hmm. I think as artists for 20 plus years, watching artists have these lyrics used against them all the time, especially when they're committing the acts and they're able to show the mind state that you're willing to do certain things. If you're not making conscious decision as, you know what, some shit I'm just not going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I understand. It's certain things. I've engaged in certain things. I know people engage in certain things. I'm around certain things, and I understand that what I say can and will be used against me in the court of law, like they say all the time.
And also, right. These guys are being very specific. Like, they're naming right. actual names, mm-hmm. actual crimes,
actual
locations,
yeah.
dates. So yeah. It's like, what do you expect? Mm-hmm. Ask the. I want to hear from the attorney.
I mean, I think... To Mice's point, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. And you know the hip-hop police have existed for a long
That's
time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So in any scenario, people build cases. So they're probably following you for an extended period of time. And it seems like this is a pattern that departments are now practicing.
Mm-hmm.
So artists should say, hold on, wait, let me protect myself. We were talking about it earlier, even in the context of the violence, right? Whether or not you think violence in lyrics actually leads to violence in the streets, one of the biggest targets are rappers
mm-hmm.
of the violence we see in our communities. So at some point as an artist, you would think you would want to protect yourself, right? From the violence that could potentially happen because people are listening to your lyrics. So to Mice's point, it's like at some point, protect yourself.
Yeah,
don't say this in lyrics and don't have this particular content that could potentially create an atmosphere in your environment that you fall victim to. Why would you continue to do that? Because in essence, you're acting against your own best interest.
Let's stay here for a minute.
I'll ask one question. Right. So what are your thoughts on people trying to ban that and to stop, you know, the government from using their lyrics? Because, you know, like Mike said, some people are telling on themselves. So what are your thoughts on them actually doing it?
You mean like the legislation that they're trying to pass that says you can no longer use these lyrics against
correct.
Folks? I'm not going to lie. I'm torn. In that scenario, right? I think that, to Mice's point, if you're telling on yourself, right, unless you use a disclaimer and say, everything I'm saying here is entertainment, there's nothing here I'm saying that is real, then there, in a lot of cases, even like if you have a gun on you, there's a doctrine where they say if it's in plain sight,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't have the ability to search your vehicle except when a gun is in plain sight. Or something illegal is in plain sight, then I have the ability to search your car. So if you're not just plain sight, your language is saying that you're doing something,
mm-hmm.
then I have to say maybe they should be able to use it. And then my other thought...
Not even
folks,
doing did.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the question is, why would you not want them to use this if somebody's saying this?
I think for me...
You know what I'm saying? It's strange.
What it comes down for me is I come from the streets. Like, if you a street dude, we knew you don't put stuff on record.
That's a fact.
We knew we're not talking about crime.
Right.
We didn't even want to do interviews. Most street dudes that we knew, you very seen them on... Very seldomly seen them on camera. They didn't talk a lot because they... Still to this day, the OGs that ain't even in the street no more. They be like, I ain't trying to do no interview.
Right.
I don't want to talk about none of that.
Right.
Like, I don't... Like, they don't live that life. So... I don't know what made this era think that you could commit crime in plain sight and be free. And I've been saying that. I don't understand what is the mind state. Like, when we talk about the PNB Rock situation, right,
mm-hmm.
it has to be levels of mental health, right? To say that you're going to walk in broad day and just in the middle of nowhere shoot and kill somebody for a chain, you can't even be thinking mm-hmm. because what are you going to do with that chain? How far are you going to get with that chain?
Right.
After you, everywhere, we live in police states now. Everybody got a camera. Everybody mm-hmm. got a phone. It's cameras all over. They can pretty much track you everywhere you go. I tell people this every day. I'm like, yo, you don't realize that every crime is on camera somewhere. Somebody got a phone camera. There's cameras connected to the store. Mm-hmm. They can literally trail you to where you go. So the mind state that you took a chain, what do you think? You pretty much gave up your whole life for a chain.
But the thing that you're saying, Mice, the idea that we know, anyone who knows, if you're doing crime, you don't say you're doing crime. People, that's a basic rule. So then the question becomes, why would people actively compromise themselves like that? And from my perspective, is because someone else is making you do that.
Right.
There's something else that's making you do something. You're going against a basic rule, and that don't make sense.
I think Mike said something earlier, and it's something that I've been saying. So many people was fronting for so long, especially in rap music, and being rewarded for it. So if you're pretending to be the biggest super thug criminal in the world on these records,
right.
If I'm a dude that's really doing it in the street, I'm going to be like, well, I want to get paid too because I'm really living this life. So I think that's where... people started, that's when it started, the line started getting blurred between the streets and rap music.
But even in that, you still got to work smarter and not harder, right? And I think that goes back to the personal responsibility of the individual and his or her camp. I don't usually look at the artists because they're artists like that. Right. But I do blame the people who they surround themselves with. Somebody has to be in the camp smart enough to be able or bold enough to say that we're not doing this. Right.
But a lot of
you know,
these,
you're
a
not
lot of
saying
these,
that.
The problem is a lot of these artists surround themselves by yes men.
Right.
They get rid of the people who say, yo, we shouldn't be doing that. Yo, that doesn't make sense because everybody is perpetuating and making you feel like you're the man because they need something from you.
Mm-hmm.
That one or two people, a lot of them have to get rid of them and come back because they have to make mistakes. Like you watch these, when we all came into the game, all of us came into the game with posses. It was 100 of us.
Yes, sir.
Everybody had 100 dudes. I was walking the club with 100 dudes, and it would be a dude that barely even knew me would get us into a fight and get me banned from a club. Right. But then I started realizing, like, what?
This don't make
why
sense.
Am I bringing all these people? I got to pay for y'all. I got to be responsible for you. I got to do this. And then when it all goes wrong, it's on me.
Mm-hmm.
And those circles start to get smaller and smaller. And then mm-hmm. you go back to the original people who try to tell you you didn't need those people
and
from the beginning.
Begin with,
so it's
right.
a real process. And I think it's harder now. Because the violence is way more incentivized. Like if you
correct.
Look at the mm-hmm. artists that are being signed right now, every one of them has real beef. Mm-hmm. The songs they talk about is real beef.
That's right.
It's real things that people know is going on in the streets. So they're being rewarded for having real beef. So when they're getting
right.
killed or they're getting locked up, like, damn, that's messed up. No, it's not that messed up. Y'all signed him because you know he had beef. And then you made the song that he had beef with platinum. So
that's
the
right.
dudes he shot or robbed didn't forget about it. You made them more angry because now they like, we're going to get the drop on you. So now the beef elevates to another level, or they got to do something to protect themselves, so they locked up or they dying. And this is a cycle that we continue in.
But the labels are using it too, because you could say this is not the type of sound we're going to go after, because not only does it elevate the sound, it elevates the beef. So if you make a strategic decision that that's what you're going to do, you realize that that's profitable and that's how you're choosing to make your money.
The sad thing is, you know, at the end of the day, is the record label and the record industry is a business, right?
For sure.
So look at these kids that come from places where they don't have much and they have beef and they're going back and forth. And they're looking at these streaming numbers going up. And a label's looking at it as, okay, well, I'm going to make money off of this.
Yeah.
And they put more money into it and, you know, hopefully, you know, they hope that this artist goes for 10 years. But a lot of times they don't. Because like what my son says, this record that you just talked about shooting me or killing me or robbing me just sold 1 million records.
But mm-hmm. like you said, businesses protect their investment. So even if I know I'm going to sign an artist who has a likelihood of dying because they got beef now, and even you see other corporations do it, I'm going to take an insurance policy out on you. So even in the event of your demise,
right, they still
which is probably going to happen, I'm going to protect my asset on the back end.
Now, is that real? Because I've been seeing that floating around, but then it's just like they was like, that's not true. Because even they keep saying that about Empire, but Empire is not even a label. It's a distribution.
Right.
No, that's true. I mean, I was signed to Epic Records, and when I got signed to Epic Records, they wanted me to sign, get a life insurance policy on me. The artist actually has to sign off on it, though. I didn't sign off on it, but absolutely positively. They give you a big upfront money, and they want to make sure that they can make their money back. If something happens to you, they don't get that money back. So they look at it like, if something happens, we'll get a life insurance policy to get our money back if you
But you don't have to sign it.
No, I didn't sign it.
But I've seen it with corporations like Walmart. There's a little documentary that talks about like Walmart taking out small policies on their workers who are not necessarily worth as much as a hip-hop artist would be worth, and still making good on their investment in the event that someone dies. So these corporations are doing that, right?
How much responsibility do we put on the industry and rappers for creating this culture?
I think, on the industry, and I think they have a if not equivalent amount of responsibility, because we just talked about who benefits, right? And so at the end of the day, they walk with all the bags, while at the same time, back in the, you know, in the neighborhoods, we have to deal with a lot of this trauma. And that's where you don't get all of this stuff lands right back in our lap. And at the end of the day, the industry walks with the bag. And so, yes, they should have some responsibility, if not equal responsibility.
You know, I was going to ask you a question, A.T. Mitchell.
Yes, sir.
I have a huge problem with New York's gun laws, right?
Yes, sir.
I'm explaining to you why, right? So I'm a licensed owner, right? I can carry my gun in, I think, 35, 37 states legally, carried on my hip, not a problem. New York, I have a problem. My son will probably tell you the same, because we kind of came up on the same time. Most of the times when people carry weapons, it's not to do something aggressive. It's defending.
Defense. Yes, sir.
Right? So if I'm walking around New York City and I walk out this building and somebody tries to rob me, I can't defend myself.
Right.
You know what I mean? And people say, well, you get security. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. But a lot of people can't afford 24 hours, 7 days a week of security.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's a problem, because if I get caught with my gun trying to defend myself, not aggressive, not robbery, right. not shooting, not doing nothing stupid, just trying to defend myself like I do when I'm in Georgia or Florida or Texas or any of those other places, I go to jail for 3 years.
Mm.
That's crazy to me. That doesn't sit well with me for trying to defend myself. You know what
I mean? Right, right. Now, I do understand what you're saying, man, as a licensed gun owner. But, you know, and I know that there's a lot of people who are walking around here with unlicensed
guns. That's why we need guns for them.
That's why we need guns, because they don't have it.
So at the end of the day, which you, and hopefully we won't have to experience an OK Corral type situation where there's two people out there literally, you know, banging in the middle of Times Square or downtown Manhattan or whatever, because, again, you're dealing with people that are legally licensed versus people that are not. Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with training. You know, you got people that don't know how to shoot, which is part of why we actually got Boycott Black Murder, because we see this stuff again. It winds up back in the neighborhood's lap, where people are dying, innocent people are dying from senseless gun violence every day. So it is a, you know, it's almost like it's unfortunate for those of you who are responsible. But I think when you look at a city as crowded as New York City, you know, it can happen anywhere. You have a lot more casualties.
Because criminals are smart. They know 9 times out of 10, if somebody's walking down the street, they, especially in New York, you ain't got a legal gun.
Right.
Unless you're a police officer, correction officer,
yes,
or was able to get it. Now people are starting to get it, but very few. So they know 9 times out of 10 they got the drop on you.
Right.
And it just always bothered me with New York City with that.
Yeah, man, this is the biggest city out of all cities. And so at the end of the day, man, we want to make sure that everybody's safe. You know, we want to make sure that those of you who have the right and, you know, the privilege of being able to arm yourselves versus those people who, the majority of us, who are not, we want to make sure everybody's safe. And that's the work that we do. So we're just really just trying to keep, you know, this work going, these messages, these campaigns. They have to be, you know, again, back to hip-hop and the industry. Everybody has to be involved.
And how are they keeping the guns off the street? What's the process to try to make sure they get more guns off the street?
I don't think they are.
No, I mean, another good question. I mean, for like Charlamagne's point, the illegal guns, the access to weaponry in the neighborhoods right now is crazy.
Do you see the guns they're pulling off these streets?
Yeah. Yo, bro, we talking about good. Yo, literally.
But the
brand
question
new
is, why
too,
are they even
brand
being
new.
Sold? Why do you have the ability to get assault rifles? And that's my issue, my challenge around the guns, because I understand the importance of defending yourself, and I think that is important, and it's a right that people have, right? Second Amendment. But the issue becomes when there's so many guns in circulation. Like, I know, you know, when I was coming up, if a couple of people had a gun, it was like, damn, you know who had the guns
right.
in the neighborhood.
Right.
And you knew if something would happen, this might happen. But I remember, like, you know, not too distant past, It's like every kid got a gun or has the ability to get a gun. And it's like there's way too many guns in circulation. And the NRA and the folks who produce guns are advocating for more guns to be in communities. And I just don't. And the proof is in the pudding. It doesn't make us safer. It hasn't made society safer. So I think we have to take a different approach to responding to how we keep ourselves safe and what we do. Because now every man, woman, child in America has access to a gun.
And before, like you said, it was a 38 special. It was a beat up revolver. Yeah. It was a gun that looked dirty and dusty. Yeah. Now to your point, what you said earlier, I mean, they have
military grade
equipment.
They got colorful guns. That,
yes.
Ghost like, guns.
They
got all
kinds of extended clips. It's crazy. Like, the police can't beat them.
That's a fact. I think what has to happen, though, it has to be a culture shift, right? Mm-hmm. Because the culture of violence is so prominent right now that just defense and you having a gun for defense is immediately puts you in more and more danger, right? If you got a gun, a lot of people who are not trained in de-escalation and they're just a regular citizen, it's regular citizens every day that ready to kill you for stepping on their foot.
That's correct.
You can't give those type of people guns.
Right.
Like I watched in the restaurant where the lady shot the lady because she was arguing with her, pulled a gun out and shot her and said, yeah, you thought you was bad. A regular fist fight turned into... And she probably was a license carrier and shot the lady dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't, everybody can't have guns. There has to be psychotherapy things that we do. There has to be a strenuous process that you go through to make sure that you're walking around these streets. And because if you're just scared, a lot of people shoot you because you're scared.
Yeah.
If I'm walking, imagine a racist person, I'm walking behind him. He sees me and go, boom, boom, and shoot.
And it happens.
And it happens all the time. So it has to be, the culture has to shift. You know,
American culture too. I don't like when they try to say hip hop and black. No. This is American culture. This is the Wild Wild West.
That's
you know what I mean?
That's a fact.
But what
that's
I will say about hip hop culture, right? And this is what I want to do because I don't want to put it on the music. Like music is a result of the reality.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Not the opposite. The reality is not a result of music. These kids are talking about what they're actually going through because that's what I did. I would be hypocritical to act like I don't understand that. I came in here, might sound lefty gun in the right palm. Popping niggas in their sleep so they die. So this was what I knew at 18 years old. This was our reality. But I do have to say, at what point, right? Once that reality shifts and you become a young millionaire, right? What are you doing? Because the industry and everybody is invested in us killing each other and us dying. That's they're making million-dollar investments in that.
Yeah.
What responsibility do the artists who get rich have to invest in us living, right? What are you willing to give? Because we know, okay, that's entertainment. We're saying this is entertainment. This is what we're talking about. We ain't living that. So now in real life, like the actors do, right? The actors play commando. They do this. Robert De Niro does this. And he goes back to his community and he invests in that community. Mm-hmm. He invests in making sure that the people around him are better. So I want to see artists, right? I want to see artists. When I put this Boycott Black Murder thing together, it was saying to myself, I want to see artists, athletes, everybody prominent, regular community activists, you know, brothers from the community who are doing the work, sit down and say, okay, what do we need to invest in our communities to make sure the realities that we talk about in these this music, they don't have to experience that no more,
now,
right?
Let me ask you, my son, you know, what do you say to somebody to say that now you're the old man? And the reason I say that is, you know, the first time people say is, oh, they could get security. You know, and I know, coming up, a lot of artists faked it, right? Mm-hmm. You look like you had everything. You got the nice car, but you ain't really have it.
Right.
You showed out because it made you look good. It got you into that club. It got your song played. It got this, that, and the other. They ain't really have it. And a lot of times, a lot of people, they run with 50 people because they can't afford security. Those 50 people is free. They're going to ride regardless. So what do you say to those people? Because a lot of these artists are doing that. They can't afford
it. If you can't afford to protect it, you can't afford to wear it.
And that's what I'm saying. And that's the reality of the situation.
Like you wore it.
Exactly. But no, but the thing is, I wasn't like that, and I wore it, but I wasn't wise. I didn't have a lot of people around me that told me different things. And the one person who did, me and him would go back and forth and argue about, and he'd be like, yo, you can't do this, you can't do this. And
well, Mike, you also was built different. I mean,
I was.
People, I don't want to talk about Mike to be security.
I mean,
so,
I didn't
want
to. That wasn't really what I wanted to say.
I'm talking about on the come up. When you
this
was coming
on the come
up.
But yes, I still was.
We
I still
ran
was.
Into each other all
yeah,
the time,
I was
man.
Just a different breed of individual. Like, I would be by myself. I never needed 50 people. You understand what I'm saying? I was willing to deal with whatever consequences, but even that didn't make much sense, right? Because I was always on edge, and it created more situations. But I'm just saying, at this point, hip-hop, the culture of hip-hop is so much bigger. It's not just the music. It's sports. It's everything, right? And we have to invest in our lives the same way that every other community does.
Right. That's right.
So, and that's what Boycott Black Murder is. Okay, we make the music. We saying that drill music and none of that is what's responsible for the violence. Then we have to, I want to see these artists, all the drill artists, all the top artists say, okay, I'm going back to the communities. I'm going to invest this, right? We're going to put this amount of money in a fund. What do our communities need? These communities who are feeding you, making you millionaires, making you rich, what are you willing to invest to make sure the kids don't got to go through the same thing that you got to do? What are, there are circumstances, trauma that's going in those communities. What are you willing to invest? Are you going to do some concerts? Let's do some concerts in the community so that we can take that money and we can give it back in those communities, build these centers that they have, be able to employ the mental health, whatever is going on, because every other culture and everything is invested in it. We are not investing in that, and that's what my problem is. I'm not mad at drill music. Nah, I came up on
street music.
Street music. I came up on Lox. I came up with M.O.P. Like, it wasn't nobody harder than M.O.P. Mm-hmm. It wasn't nobody harder than Fredro and them. Like, so that's I understand that that's a reality, but now we understand that people are dying every day, and these kids are dying at 13. This is their only way out. This is what they only see this way out. So if we're not giving them something else, then they're going to keep killing each other. Mm-hmm. And we just killing ourselves.
I'm glad you said that, though, because we often have revisionist history as older people and act like we didn't grow up on the worst shit known to fucking man.
Absolutely. But wasn't that this propensity? Like, I was thinking
about... I don't know.
I can't say... Yo, listen to me.
Bro.
When you walked into a club where M.O.P. was on...
Annie up.
But how many MOPs were there? There wasn't 20 MOPs.
They were snatching the chain.
We were get shot with a chopper.
You did get shot.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Throw your guns in the air and all of that shit like that.
But that was honest.
You wasn't getting shot.
I don't know about that.
Not like this.
I don't think it was at the propensity that we see now.
It wasn't.
That's my issue.
Because the access wasn't the same.
But we're acting like they haven't been doing Stop the Violence records, self-destruction records.
But we need one of those. That's another thing. We need a Stop the Violence. I'm reaching out to all artists. We need a self-destruction. We need one of those right now. And we need it from prominent people. We need young dudes.
Yes.
I need Dirk on the song talking about, I've been through this, but I realize we can't be killing each other right now. I need Chief Keef to get, like, I need those, because that's where these people think that they following them. And not saying that they're responsible for it, but they think these young kids want to be y'all. Yeah. And not knowing that your reality is different. You live in mansions now. You away from violence. You ain't outside beefing. That's what you had to go through to get to. So now invest to make sure that these kids don't have to
and
go through the same
thing. And even evolution, right?
To.
Like, certain people, you'll eat a certain thing. And then at some point, history will say, hey, you can't keep eating that because you'll die. Mm-hmm. You don't say, eat more of that. So even in the context of music, I think at some point, and you see it happen with artists, after they make it, they say, I don't want to make music like this no more because it's dangerous and it's going to cause these issues. But no one allows that to get visibility. So there is something that is also impeding the process of evolution that would naturally happen, where I think you would get less and less music like this. So as a result, you get more and more music like this. And then the other thing starts to happen where the community is impacted. And we're not just talking about violence, because I think in every facet of life, violence happens. And that's a reality. But we're talking about hyper-violence. Mm-hmm. What hyper-equipment to cause violence? So we're talking about violence happening at a propensity that we have not seen before.
I don't know, man. That 80s crack era was something serious,
as far as statistically, you're correct, Charlamagne, right? There's way more people that got shot and killed in the 80s and the 90s than they are today. We are, statistically speaking, we're much safer now than we were back then.
Maybe but we back see it more to but of social media.
Because of the social media. Now, we didn't have that back then. So when you put more of the social media on it, it just magnifies it. So that's back to his point. This is a different level.
And the question
of violence.
Is even
it's not,
like, who's the safer? Because it's like, if people are still dying, and we say it sometimes in the community, one death is too much.
Right.
And we're not just seeing one death. Even when we were talking about Labor Day weekend in Philadelphia, in Chicago, where you're talking about mass shootings. This wasn't necessarily something that you saw before, where 3, 4, 5, 7, 10 people are shot at one time.
Yeah, but it's
we're dealing with a different kind of, I think, a kind of hyper violence that we haven't necessarily dealt with before. That's
now, but even then, but even in early on, like you would see different things. But now I'm seeing like innocent people being killed.
As yes, sir.
Children,
grandmothers, and grandfathers.
It's crazy.
It was at one time, and I know robbery and violence is no respect, but it was more of a respect. You don't mess with kids.
There was
you don't
a
mess
code.
With older people.
Exactly.
Now it just seemed like
All that's out the window
you
now.
Robbing people with one leg.
Anybody can get it now. Unfortunately, is the mantra amongst the perpetrators, right? There's no morals and no codes anymore. Whereas we did have
it's
that.
It's coward like, culture. That's
it was
what
a coward culture.
It
was that. That's what seems to be the hype. You know, this is why again we need to all collaborate. We need to all bond because there's a number of us that be knowing how, and these young people, most of which, I mean, I say that I don't even like to blame generations, but they're misguided missiles, right? They really are. They don't know until the end of the day. The work that we do, you know, with the crisis management system, the work that we do in the Kirvanas global movement around this country, we see these young people every day and we work to meet them where they are and to hopefully be able to convince them that what they're going, the pathway that they're on, it's not going to end well. But as we all know, it's somebody's going to throw a brick, right? And then they're going to find themselves in a situation where then now they're realizing from the back end that they, you know, it wasn't worth it. And so we're trying to do that.
And the
work.
Deep thing about it is, now when we talk about violence, we talk about it in the context of it being a public health issue.
Yes,
like violence is a disease, the way it spreads, right? So even when we think about something like the coronavirus, people could have easily said, well, there's been the flu before, and some people did. They said, we've had these issues before. It's not that big a deal. And then thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of people perish because of that mentality. And then at some point, the people who are responsible and who are in leadership have to say, we have to devise a real strategy to respond to this because we have to save lives. And we're the folks who are saying we don't want people to die.
That's a
and
fact.
I think we're in the same situation. Sure, maybe violence has happened at a higher propensity before, but we're still in a situation where an epidemic exists.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, we don't have an epidemic response.
That's right.
We don't get
That's
the real. Resources.
That's right.
We don't have a real response system. And in fact, people are saying, let more of this flourish. So that's my challenge
certain,
with it.
In certain neighborhoods or in certain communities,
precisely.
Right? Like mass shootings do require mass resources.
Right.
So when we see mass shootings in other communities, we see all of the people that are attached to that community come out, as been mentioned. But in our
Explain
communities...
Explain to you was telling me about what happened with Park.
Like the Parkland shooting, and you know, the list goes on and on. You go back to Columbine, you can go up to Newtown, you can look at, you know, the Vegas when they're at the concert, the Nevada joint. Those neighborhoods and communities came out. I mean, literally in Newtown, the community of Newtown, Connecticut, said that they were not sending their kids back into that school. So what they did as a city is they tore down, they demoed the school and built a whole new school for their kids because they're animate. My kids are not going to be re-traumatized. Mm. The difference is, and this is why I go back to your point about where hip-hop, I think, is our secret sauce. When these things are happening every single day in our communities, our artists, our personalities, our superstars, our leaders don't come out in that same manner. We don't organize a benefit concert yet. You know, we don't have it so that we have the ability to raise millions of dollars to go towards it.
How much did the people raise in the school, the Parkland shooting?
Oh, man, they've been now since day one, they've been raising hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, quiet money. This is what they do, and I respect it.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying at the same time, when you do that research, that we could do something similar if we band together.
And what's fascinating is it's communities who don't experience the same propensity of violence who are able to get even more resources than
That's
us.
Crazy.
Who are experiencing violence at higher rates, and we don't even get the base level of what they get. And it doesn't make sense at some point.
You're right, but then, you know, it's because the judicial system is big business. From the prisons
Huge.
And everything else.
It does.
Yes.
So it's just like they said, you ain't meant to survive because it's a setup.
Mm-hmm.
So you're set up to not only die, but to fuel an economy that thrives off you dying.
Yes.
And that at that point, you got to realize we have to do something different, which is what we say all the time. And this is part of what we're saying, because it can become normalized.
Mm-hmm.
It can feel like this is something that always happens. It's not a big deal.
That's exactly where we are. When I looked at PNB Rock, right, and I was looking at some of the comments, and I was just seeing, and I'm like, wow. This is looking like deja vu, and most people are like, yo, well, that's what happens. And it's like, and I was having a conversation with Meek, and he was really in a dark place, and he was just like, yo, this is not okay. You know, this is one of my brothers from my hood. Like, this is not okay. And I was talking to him and communicating with, and I understand that this is very dangerous. In this moment, what happened to him, you know, it's different codes, it's things involved, Pop Smoke, like these are dangerous, and we have to, and that's why I want to call for a hip hop summit, because we need leaders, we need hip hop artists, we need people to come together and say, look, we are united, right? We're not promoting anything. We know that bad things happen, but we want everybody to know that this is a community, you know, and we're going to protect each other. And we want to make sure that people feel safe, that we're looking out for each other, if nothing else. You know what I'm saying? So
I agree with everything y'all saying. I just wonder that, being that we know systemically all of these socioeconomic conditions were created to have these brothers even go to a life of crime, are we able? We can't recreate that.
No, we could create a system. You got to create, like Angelo says this all the time, we have to have a system to combat a system.
That's what I'm saying. Right? Yeah. We can create a system, but it's not going to be like the government.
No, it's not going to be the government. It's going to be, it has to be grassroots. It has to, like, everything we've done. Like, the fact that we create culture, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that somebody can wear dreads today and everybody's wearing dreads. Mm-hmm. Somebody wears a beard today. Somebody's doing this and that. That means that we have the power to change the culture.
We influence behavior.
Mm-hmm. So it has to be those people who are influencers, not to say, yo, this is not my fight. I can't be involved in that. I'm doing this. No, they know that's what you want to say. They know that you're more invested in protecting your personal assets, right? So and once we say to ourselves that it's not about me, it's about the greater good of all of us, let me utilize. Now, I'm not going to use everything, okay? You know, we have Harry Belafonte who funded the movement and said, okay, I'm going to make sure Martin Luther King is able to do this. I know you're doing this, so let me make sure that you're able to do this freely without being shut down and this and that, because when I get on Instagram, they're going to shadow ban me because I talk about certain things. When I talk about the propensity of violence in our communities and talking about stopping boycotting black murder, it gets 2 or 3 views. It's, I can't go live for 6 months. Like, these are things that's happening. So if we're not creating our own platforms, if we're not empowering our own leaders and our own voices in our community, then we left to get whatever they give us. So we have to say, yo, I see these people doing this, and I know that's what needs to be done. Let me, even if I got to quietly fund let me quietly fund that. If I got to build something and be a donor in something, let me do something that contributes to making sure that we're safe.
So what Mice is, I'm sorry, brother, but what Mice is speaking to is, like, practice today. Like, when you look at the armed forces, right, you have the Marines, you have the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and they don't play the necessarily the same position, but they together, they're the armed forces. So this, everybody's job is not to be on the front line, right? And so we don't expect for just any average person to say, I'm going to hit the streets tomorrow, I'm going to interrupt violence. That's not your lane. But bring us, those of us that are the Marines, that are willful to go out there without a vest, without a gun, make sure that we got the aid that we need. We shouldn't have to be relying upon government and other people to be able to keep the work going on the streets. When we are hip hop, you know, we come from that. This is our culture. Mm-hmm. And so with that type of support, that may be your contribution to the work that's going on the ground, and it would be well received.
And what AT is saying, which is deep, that analogy, and we talk about it all the time, is that you have to also realize you're at war.
Right.
At some point, have to realize that you're under attack and you're experiencing something that others don't experience. Because if someone's fighting a war against you and you don't think you're at war,
you
just dying in silence. And we're saying that at some point, and this is the point for us, we've been doing this for years, but we're saying it must be the point for the rest of us to say we're at war and we have to respond accordingly. The artists are so important, because what people know is that art imitates life and light imitates art. So they know art impacts lifestyle. So they know art impacts lifestyle. So they say, if we can get artists to do X, Y, and Z, this is going to impact lifestyle, because they know lifestyle is culture. And that's really what's happening. And I've had the opportunity to talk with brothers who have spent long times and even created gangs. And what some of them over years say is that the lifestyle that they're living is not really a lifestyle. It's a death style. At some point, you have to come to that realization. And then you say, if I want to stay alive, I have to have a lifestyle. It can't be a death style, because this is going to take us down this direction.
So let's talk about the problems. I was going to say, so what are the solutions?
Yeah, that's why I want to talk about Man Up and Boycott Black Murder. But what exactly is Man Up?
Man Up is, like you said, brother, it is one of those solutions. It's a community-based nonprofit, you know, street organization that I founded now 18 years ago. After the unfortunate shooting of an 8-year-old named Deshaun Hill in East New York, Brooklyn, already being on the front line, I mean, you know, I felt that when that little boy got shot and killed, I wasn't doing enough. And so I had to do more. I literally just started by babysitting his older brother and sister, his little brother and sister that was actually with him when he died. And so I just created an after-school program, spent into a summer camp, spent into an athletic tournament, spent into what we have now 18 years later, you know, a multi-million-dollar nonprofit that's putting multi-millions of dollars back into the community by hiring people from the neighborhood, people who have been there and done that, people that got backgrounds, but they now, you know, they're using that influence that they once had for the greater good. And so that's one of the solutions. We are part of the, you know, crisis management system. Y'all have had a lot of my colleagues up here, you know, before Erica Ford, you know, Tamika Mount, Unto the Freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, we got a list of other organizations citywide that we formed here in New York City, and we go across country and we help other people do the same work in their neighborhood. So that's part of the solution. But the support for these type of organizations is shy. You know, we are, unfortunately, we're vulnerable because we get our money from the government. Again, if we had our superstars, like what we've seen happen in Florida and in Connecticut and other people, you know, they've actually come out to support the work that's going on the ground, then we can feel a lot more confident in the work and the efforts that we're doing.
And tell them about the czar position.
So, I mean, I'm the first czar that was ever appointed in government here in New York City. I've worked under four different mayors in the past, and this particular mayor, Mayor Eric Adams, he did something historic, right? He said he wanted to be different. So he sought out, you know, a person here that he knows that comes from the ground, that works in the community, that's in the trenches, and he says, I want to give you an appointed position. I want to bring you into my administration, place you alongside my other high-level government officials, and I want you to lead this city in this particular charge. And so I became the gun czar, gun violence prevention czar, in June of this year. And you know, it's been amazing. I mean, just I didn't even know that much more about my own city now that I've traveled now throughout the rest. I'm up in the Bronx and Queens, Staten Island, Brooklyn, all over. And, you know, we're thinking about the solutions. We have $100+ billion budget. You know, we figured that we have the resources, but they're caught up in the agencies. And we need to, you know, loosen up the, you know, the pipeline so that we make sure that the people who are on the ground actually getting some of those resources. But again, we cannot rely solely on that.
And part, I just want to say, part of the reason the czar position is so important is because oftentimes, even if you look at New York City, where there are a lot of organizations that are doing crisis management, addressing violence, they often are working in silos. And they're not working together in a network always. So creating the czar position allows you to centralize those things and connect people together. So the same thing is true in Newark with Keisha Urie, who's running the Office of Violent Prevention, which just happened maybe a year ago. So this work has been happening across the country, but it's often happened in small pockets. So to create a position like the czar for AT, now you have someone in leadership who is coordinating these efforts more.
From the ground, from the ground. The difference is, in addition to my brother, is that people like myself, normally we weren't placed in government, right? Because we were on the menu. You know, now we literally, we're at the table. Mm-hmm. And we are literally chairing the table. So that's the difference. And so I appreciate the opportunity to represent the city in that regard. And I believe that when we all come together, my job is, as the brother said, is to centralize everything, to bring everybody together. I appreciate, you know, this opportunity because, again, our work has been, you know, kind of swept under the rug. And, you know, people have been dying and they've got this mindset that that's what's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, in their neighborhoods, you're supposed to kill each other. But that's not so. Even if one person still continues to die, that's one death too many.
That's why I love what Mike started with, the boycott black murder movement, man. Break that down for us, man.
Well, it's pretty much just an extension of what AT does, right? Is that me having an influence in the hip-hop culture and also in the streets and also being on the front line of this movement and just understanding that violence is so many different directions it comes from. We boycott against police violence, we boycott against community violence. It's so many different ways. And it all boils down to black violence because blacks are the leading people who are dying from gun violence every day in this community. So we have to have the same energy for both, right? The same way we're going out there marching and we're saying we need to have accountability, we need to have accountability in our own communities. So what I wanted to do was utilize, because there are so many different leaders across this nation, AT and like he said, Keisha Urie and also, there are brothers out in Vegas as we're working with right now. So we want to connect with all of the like minds, you know, Pastor McBride, yes. Chico.
Yes.
You know, all of these brothers, they are brothers who have, a lot of them are formerly incarcerated, some aren't, who understand what it is needed in this time, right? And I want us to come together and create this whole initiative and go to communities and empower the people in those communities who have the voices, who have the ears of the communities and say, okay, what do you need in these communities, right? And then we do what we can to bring those resources to make sure that the murders and the violence is stopped, because we understand that poverty is violence. You know, that's it's right. not violence does not happen where well-to-do people are. It doesn't happen everywhere.
And they don't need as much police. They don't need as
exactly.
much money.
Exactly. I've been all around this world, and I realize that the safest places do not have police.
That's
in
right.
them. There are no police on the corner, so that's a myth. So what happens is the safest communities are communities who don't have poverty.
They
so
have resources.
They have the resources. So what we want to do at Boycott Black Murder is utilize every voice, every community leader, every, you know, violence interrupt, and come together and say, okay, we're going to your community. We want to utilize. We like the Wu-Tang Clan of gun violence, right? And everybody has their own voice. Everybody has their own say, but it's not working in silos. It's us coming together. We want to come to your community, and we want to show up, and we want to bring your favorite artist to your community, and we want him to sit with us, and he want him to tell you what we don't tell you. So we want to collaborate mm-hmm. with artists and with influencers and all of those, and come together and create this movement that's going to take a lot of these guns and take the violence out
so
of the street.
So if you even look like our brothers like PNB, you know, that was one of our own. That brother was
yes,
one
was.
Who literally would come to the community.
That's right.
Would be on the streets, out there at the schools. You know, and that's something, that's why this particular death is real personal to us, because it's like, you know, now you're taking out the good rappers. You know, you're taking out the good artists, those that are involved in community. You know, and that's really something that's really hit us hard when we heard of the brother's passing. And so we hope that we don't want to see another PNB. You know, we want to make sure.
Shit, I didn't want to see another Nipsey.
Absolutely,
you know what I mean?
Right?
I didn't
want
to see
fact.
Another Dolph. Like,
right.
But it's a disease, Charlamagne, mm-hmm. and nobody's exempt or immune to it.
Right.
So, I mean, this brother was sitting down just having some lunch with his family, you know? And so if we don't want to see another, then that's where, again, we all got to come together so we can prevent it. We can't guarantee, you know, but we can at least feel good that we've made every strong effort mm-hmm. in the process.
And I agree with all of that. I still think, though, it still has to be some type of self preservation.
No, I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, when you're worth something, you got to move like you're worth it.
That's
like, you can't
mm-hmm.
just be.
But you
got to
feel like you're
everywhere.
Worth something.
Yes,
and I say
mm-hmm.
it to people all the time, we often confuse cost, worth, and value.
Mm. Break
and
that
for
down.
For young folks, it's hard to feel like you're worth something if you have no value.
Mm.
And there's no
mm.
value in your community, and your community doesn't have resources, which is why most young people, and I felt the same way, you don't think you're going to live past 21.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not be in the army, but why do you feel that way? Why does your community produce that kind of trauma in young black boys and young black girls? It's because there's no value in their communities. And precisely what we have to do is not only infuse those resources, but when Mice talks about building a movement, we're talking about building that system that transforms that very thing, where young people say, I do have value, and I do have a reason to live, and I shouldn't pick up a gun. And I should also tell this other brother, don't pick up a gun and don't use that gun, because I value you and I value you. And Malcolm said it way back when. He's like, who taught you to hate yourself?
That's right. That's right.
That's the question we have to ask ourselves, because you don't kill somebody you love or someone you care about.
That's
or right.
I can't kill
someone.
My brother,
that's right.
Because I love
you. And you kill someone because you don't think they're your
and
brother.
That's what I say. And we have to identify each other as brothers again, right? We took the neighbor out of neighborhood and we just said the hood. So we don't even see ourselves as connected no more. So we got to put the neighbor back in hood. We got to identify each other as brothers. I'm dropping a song today called Boycott Black Murder. And the video drops. It's very powerful. I want y'all to see the video. Hopefully you'll play the song, Envy, you know, quote unquote, hopefully.
You can't play positive music on the radio.
You can't do
well,
it.
Listen, we're going to try to.
That's
today.
Why we're in the situation we're in now.
That's why we're in the situation. But really, man, I really want us to understand that the dynamics of our community is very serious, right? We are at war against the system, and then we're at war with each other, right? You know, the minister said, I don't even know who the enemy is right now. You make it very hard for me.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Right,
when we going against each other. Yep. So we have to re-identify each other and see each other as brothers again and connect with each other. Because when you see somebody as your brother, you don't want to take his life.
Right.
You want to do everything you can to protect and make sure that person is safe. So let's put the neighbor back in neighborhood. Let's start community, build community, mm-hmm. unity and community again. We are so separated. Like, people got beef with the next door neighbor.
Yeah,
you can't even
that's
come
crazy.
Out your house. They're at war. You're the op, my next door. Yo, we got. And I'm like, what? He lived next
that's
door.
Out of control.
My next door neighbor, our doors was open. They used to just walk in. Yo, can I get a cup of sugar? Yo,
yes.
Y'all got milk in the refrigerator? Go get it. Like, we lived in the community, that's not happening no more, because the culture has told us that that's the wrong thing. And you got to think about this. Just really think about this. You can't value your life when you're willing to kill somebody and take a chain that you know throwing your life away.
Ooh, yeah.
You are, it's, listen to what I'm saying. Yeah. 90% of the people who kill somebody or rob somebody in our community is going to do 20, 15, 20 years. And they made a conscious decision that that chain, that 1 second or whatever, is worth that. How much do you actually value your life?
Right. Yeah.
Like that, I want to know, how did we get so poisoned that we put those, the that's value right. in that more than our freedom in our lives?
And they they're tricking you out of your life.
And I want to just, again, I want to reinforce and I want to give a shout out to my brothers and sisters at Man Up Incorporated.
Yeah.
Because if you came out to where we are, and we're in East New York, we're in the 7-5, which is one of the, if not right now, top of the city, unfortunately. But in pockets where we exist, we call each other brother. We call each other
that's
sister.
Correct.
You know, from as young as 5-year-old babies, they come into our programs, they adopt that mindset. When they come and they leave out, they see each other's family, because that's what it's about. We literally are, and I'm going to put that out there, we are biologically related, every single one of us, even in this room. You know, there's one race. There is a human race. And we have to stop thinking that we are separate. And like when you go to the, you go to the funeral, you go to the family reunion, you bump into people that you realize that you are related to.
That's right.
Not knowing that we really all come from the same, you know, sort of. And that's what we're doing. And we have to continue to do that. We have to raise that bar so that we build that community back
and
up.
And that's how you create transformation. Because when you look at the Cure Violence model and what's so successful is they recognize areas or precincts, a floor block radius, that they say there's high rates of violence. And they say, we're going to show up here, create supports, and we're going to reduce the violence. And that's, in fact, what happens.
That's exactly
you create a culture in a small block radius that reduces gun violence, and it works.
By changing the mindset.
But we don't get the resources to do it in the places that it needs to happen. This isn't a formula that we're making up. This is a formula that's worked for decades. And we're saying we just want more resources to continue to do it and end violence in our communities, to keep people alive, to show them they're valued, to put the neighbor back in neighborhood, and to create transformation that makes other people feel safe too. Because if this 4-block radius doesn't feel safe and there's violence, it's going to spill into your 4-block radius. Yep. So do the right thing here so that everyone can feel safe.
Yeah, well, what Elijah Muhammad used to say? Elijah Muhammad used to say a neighborhood can change a city can change a state can change a nation can change the world.
Nation building.
Nation building, man.
Well, let's introduce the song. So that
the
way I
song. There you go. It's getting played today. Today is called, this song is called Boycott Black Murder. It is a testament of what's going on in communities. The video will be dropping today too. It's a very powerful video. So I hope that it has the impact that I want it to have, man. And first, go to boycottblackmurder.com.
That's correct.
Take the pledge. We need everybody to take the pledge, man, and say, I can't kill my brother because I love my brother.
How do we donate to Man Up?
Man, they can go to our website. It's manupinc.org. That's manupinc.org. They can go to my website, at-mitchell.com as well. And, you know, all donations are tax deductible. We got the same status that Red Cross, Salvation Army, all the other charities have. We have the same charity status.
But I don't want donations. We want investments, man.
That's correct.
Invest about that. In us living, man.
All right. Well, it's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Yes, sir.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.